Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 7, Chapter 12, Text 15. Agno Guru Vatmani. Agno Guru Vatmani Cha. Sarva Bhutesh Vatoksa Jam. Bhutai Swa Dhammabi Pasyed. Apravishtam Pravishtavat. Agno Guravat. Agno Guravatmani Cha. Sarva Bhutesh Vatoksajam. Bhutai Swadhammabhi Pasyet. Abhistam Pravishtam Pravishtavat. Agno Guravatmani Cha. Sarva Bhutesh Varoksa Jam. Bhutai Swadhammabhi Pasyet. Apravishtam Pravishtavat. Others. Agna Gura Vatmani Cha. Maharajis. Agno, in the fire. Guru, in the spiritual master. Atmani, in oneself. Cha, also. Sarvabhuteshu, in every living entity. Adhoksajam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who cannot be seen or perceived with the material eyes or other material senses. Bhutai, with all living entities. Swadhammabhi, along with his lordship's paraphernalia. Pasyet, one should see. Apravishtam, not entered. Pravishtavat, also entered. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's omnipresence is the perfect realization of the absolute truth to be attained through the study of the Vedic literatures. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text 35, Andantarashta Paramanu Chayantarashtam. The Lord is situated within the universe, within the heart of every living entity, and also within the atom. We should understand that whenever the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present, He is present with all His paraphernalia, including His name, form, associates, and servants. The living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, one should understand that since the Supreme Lord has entered the atom, the living entities are also there. One must accept the inconceivable quality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For no one can understand from the material point of view how the Lord is all-pervasive and yet is situated in His own abode, Goloka Vrindavan. This realization is possible if one strictly follows the regulative principles of ashram, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Srila Madhvacharya says in this regard, apravishta sarvagata, pravishtas tu anurupavan, evam dvi rupo bhagavan harir eko janardana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in His original form has not entered everything, apravishta, but in His impersonal form He has entered, pravishta. Thus He has entered and not entered simultaneously. This is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 4, wherein the Lord says, Mayam tatamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina machtani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavashtita. By me, in my unmanifested form, the entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. The Lord can defy Himself. Thus, there is variety and unity. Ekatvam bahutvam. Om gana tamadam dasya jananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasma shi gurave namaha shi chaitanya manobhustam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakara mayam dadati swapadantikam. So how should we respond to this information that Prabhupada's giving us here in this purport? Because as devotees, there's no direct instruction. Some very interesting philosophical points being brought forward here, but there's no direct instruction from Prabhupada what we're supposed to do about it. Well, let's first ask the question, what's being said here? Let's analyze it a little bit, what's being said in this purport. Okay, so basically we have information here. It's explaining how Krishna is omnipresent. He's all-pervasive. And in the first paragraph of the purport, Prabhupada explains how He's all-pervasive as the Supersoul. The Supersoul is in the heart of every living entity. But beyond that, Prabhupada says here that the Supersoul is present with also within the atom. And then he goes on to make, and for that he's quoting the Kosta Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text 35, Andantarashta Paramanu Chayantarashtam. And then he goes on to say, we should understand that whenever the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present, and we just heard He's present in the atom, He is present with all His paraphernalia, including His name, form, associates, and servants. Well, what does that mean? Well, in the next sentence, Prabhupada says, the living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, one should understand that since the Supreme Lord has entered the atom, the living entities, plural, living entities, are also there. Does anybody know that? That we're all in the atom. According to my understanding, it's sounding like all the living entities are right there in the atom. Not just one atom, but we're there in all the atoms, because Krishna's there in all the atoms. So all the living entities are there with Krishna, so we're there in all the atoms. Learn something new every day. But Prabhupada goes on in the next sentence to, in case you're bewildered by that, like if you're feeling like, what? I mean, how am I there in all the atoms? Prabhupada says in the next sentence, one must accept the inconceivable quality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For no one can understand from the material point of view how the Lord is all-pervasive and yet is situated in his own abode, Goloka Vrindavan. So it knows it's just something you'll understand that we'll understand when we become pure devotees. That could be revealed to us, but at least at this point we can just accept that Krishna is pretty much in his personal form. He's almost, basically everywhere. He's in the heart. He's in his own abode. He's in the heart. He's within every atom. And what else left? What's smaller than the atom? The atom's supposed to be the smallest part, right? You know, nothing. So it's almost like Krishna in his personal form is present everywhere. Maybe there's a lot of space in the atom where he's kind of not quite present. But anyways, he's quite present, even in his personal form. But then Prabhupada goes on in the second part of this purport, and he quotes Madhvacharya. And Madhvacharya makes this statement that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in his original form has not entered everything, apravishta. But in his impersonal form, he has entered, pravishta. So it's saying impersonal form. Thus he has entered and not entered simultaneously. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 4, and then that famous verse is quoted with the translations, by me in my unmanifested form, the entire universe is pervaded. So one way or the other, Krishna is present. Whether he's present in his completely personal form or his impersonal form, he's present. So getting back to the first question I asked, as devotees, what should be our response to this? You know, knowing that Krishna is everywhere, at every moment, all-pervading, as Prabhupada says, omnipresent. Well, I'll try to answer that in the way of like an analogy or an example, hypothetical example. Imagine you're invited to be a guest to the estate of some very, very wealthy, powerful, important, and influential person. So what's going to be your policy, behavioral policy, your operating principle? Well, most likely, you're going to be thinking, I'm going to be on my best behavior. I'm going to be on my best behavior. Why? Because, you know, you want to make a good impression. See? You want to be on your best behavior. And especially like, you know, these days, there's cameras all over the place. I mean, say, yeah. So, you know, you'd be thinking like, okay, I want to make sure I do everything right because I want to make a good impression on this person because I want to get invited back here again, let's say, or I know this person could do a lot for me. This is a very rich, famous, powerful, influential personality. If I make a good impression, maybe I could, you know, whatever, get a great job from him or get a huge donation or whatever. So, and that makes sense. That's good thinking. You know, that's how I'd be thinking. You know, I'd be very careful about everything I did, you know, everything I said, really trying to make a good impression. So, in the same way, this entire cosmic manifestation plus, this is all Krishna's estate. You know, in other words, it's not so hypothetical. I present it as a hypothetical situation. It's actually not so hypothetical. We're in that situation. We're guests. We're guests. This is Krishna's place. Everything. You know, the entire material worlds and all the spiritual world. It's all Krishna's estate. And, you know, we're here in the material world. So we want to, knowing Krishna is everywhere, we want to be on our best behavior all the time because we want to make a good impression. Why? Because Krishna is the supreme, powerful, influential and important person. And if we can make a good impression on Krishna, wow, I mean, there's so much that we can gain. You know, we can benefit in so many ways. I mean, you make a good impression on Krishna, as you please Krishna, and you can, what to speak of something like experience the opulences of the heavenly planets, that's actually, Krishna doesn't do that to his worst enemy. Right? Because even in the Krishna book, we see when Krishna kills enemies, you never read about them get promoted to the heavenly planets. They get at least Brahma Jyoti, you know, impersonal Kaivalyam, you know, impersonal liberation. They get a form of liberation. So Krishna doesn't even award heavenly happiness to his worst enemies. And as far as, you know, impersonal liberation goes, for Krishna, that's like chump change. That's really nothing. That's like if Krishna just gives you impersonal liberation, that's like for him, that's, he gives it to the enemies, right? But, you know, beyond that, Krishna can award personal liberation, sarupya, samipya, like that. And that's okay. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good benediction if you please Krishna and be awarded, you know, your reinstatement in your swarup, your eternal spiritual form in one of the Vaikuntha planets, or perhaps Goloka Vrindavan, if we're so fortunate. And so, you know, that's perfectly Krishna's, that's something that could definitely happen. And even better than that, one could be given, benedicted with being empowered to preach Krishna consciousness. Now, there we go. I'm going to introduce a little controversy here. What? How? What are you saying? Being benedicted to, being empowered to preach Krishna consciousness is better than even going back to Godhead? Is that what I'm saying? Yes. And I'm going to read something to support that point in a second. But yeah, that's my understanding. And just last night I was looking for what I'm about to read you, but I couldn't find it. But I found another interesting reference in the Vedabase. Achyutananda, then Swami, but now Das, in 1973 in Bombay, point blank asked Prabhupada this question. He said, what's better, to desire to go back to Godhead or to desire to spread Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada, he answered him. He said, well, if you're desiring to, you know, to spread Krishna consciousness, if you're actually like, how would you say it, an empowered preacher of Krishna consciousness, going back to God is already included with that. It's already included within that second, you know, within that realization. And Prabhupada, not in this particular place, but elsewhere, Prabhupada gives that example. If you have $1 million, then all your $1, $10, and $100 problems are solved. See? So if somebody's actually established, you know, fixed up on preaching Krishna consciousness, then that other aspect of going back to God is already included. Now, here's something, a statement that Prabhupada made that sort of like supports that. This was from an excerpt from a conversation that took place in Atlanta, 1975. I believe Sura was there, between the airport book distributors and Srila Prabhupada. It's the only conversation of its sort, actually, that I'm aware of. So the devotee's spokesman says, sometimes the devotees ask if they can take birth again distributing books for you. So Prabhupada says, very good. That is real devotion. Devotees do not want to go to Vaikuntha to get any liberation. They are satisfied with service. That is pure devotion. And distributing books for the benefit of going to Krishna, that is selfishness. But if one thinks, I simply want to distribute books without any remuneration, that is a pure devotee. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, I do not wish to go to Vaikuntha unless I take all these rascals with me. That is a pure devotee. He is always under the protection of Krishna, meaning referring to that preacher. What is the use of going to Vaikuntha? Wherever he stays, that is Vaikuntha. That is pure devotional service. Mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktir hoitaki twari. Life after life, I may go on with this business. I don't want anything else. That is pure devotion. Okay, so that's sort of to support that point I just made. Now, somebody might raise the question, and Achyutananda did. He said, Prabhupada, what we experience, though, is sometimes we're finding, because he was a leader in India at the time, he said, when we're trying to get devotees to go out preaching, and they're complaining, you know, they're complaining that they're feeling, they feel like they're getting entangled. You know, they're feeling agitated, they're feeling they're getting entangled, and they're requesting that, you know, they don't want to go out, and they would like to get a bit more fixed up first, so they can, and then go out. And Prabhupada's response was, that means they are not perfect yet. They're not perfect preacher. You see? In other words, when somebody's like really fixed up, then they won't experience that. But Prabhupada acknowledged that that's the case. So that's the way to understand this. In other words, this is talking about a very high level of realization. And this next point I'm going to present is a way we can understand how a lot of things that go on in ISKCON. Like, in other words, how is it that if this the preacher is such an exalted position as we just heard described here, it's even, sort of like it's even beyond just going back to Godhead. How is it we see that sometimes preachers fall down, right? Along these same lines here, every morning we're singing about the spiritual master. We're singing, among other things, this is one of the verses we sing, the spiritual master is very dear because he is expert in assisting the gopis who at different times make different tasteful arrangements for the perfection of Radha and Krishna's conjugal loving affairs within the groves of Vrindavan. I offer my most humble obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. So how could somebody who's assisting the gopis and making different tasteful arrangements for the perfection of Radha and Krishna's conjugal loving affairs within the groves of Vrindavan fall down? How's that possible? Doesn't seem to make sense. Well, at least my explanation is this, that on one occasion, Prabhupada said, in Krishna consciousness, first you sit on the judge's bench, and you develop the qualifications. And when I looked at it, I couldn't find that in the Veda base, but I think among Prabhupada disciples, that's accepted as a genuine Prabhupada statement. In Krishna consciousness, you sit on the judge's bench, and then you develop the qualifications. In other words, when somebody gets, like, somebody becomes first initiated or second initiated, Brahman initiated, or takes sannyas, or is appointed a GBC, or is, made a guru, if they're qualified, but it's not necessarily the case that they're fully qualified. Just like when you get admitted into Harvard University. Okay, you have to have some qualification to get admitted into Harvard University. But that doesn't mean that upon getting admitted to Harvard University that you're, an accomplished scholar. No, you're not. You got the opportunity there. If you play your cards right, you will become an accomplished scholar. But at least at that point, you're not. So it's not to say that you're not qualified at all. You're unqualified. There's a certain amount of qualification is there. But it's the appointment, the title, is not an indication necessarily of full qualification. So that's how we could understand how things have happened within ISKCON. That Prabhupada said, in Krishna consciousness, first you sit on the judge's bench and then you develop the qualifications. When somebody gets second initiation, Brahminical initiation, that doesn't mean that they're fully qualified as a Brahmin. It doesn't mean they have no qualification. Obviously, they have some qualification because you got to get recommended by your temple president, and et cetera, et cetera. See, some qualification is there. But then that person has to develop the full qualification by performing the activities that a Brahmin performs, which is saying the Gayatri Mantra three times a day, engaging in deity worship and preaching, etc. And then that person will develop proper appropriate qualifications. Same thing with sannyas, same thing with GBC, same thing with guru. It's a work in progress. That's my understanding. And that with that understanding, it enables me to understand what's all the different things that have gone on, historically speaking, within ISKCON over the last, 45 years, or 40 years that I've been in the movement, or 45 years altogether, or 48 years, or whatever it is, 48 years. So, the really important thing is the qualification, which as devotees we should be concerned to try to develop the qualities, of a devotee, and we should be looking to see, we should be looking to see if we're making progress in terms of the descriptions in the scriptures. Like, for instance, Prabhupada in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 11, in the purport, Prabhupada quotes Rupa Goswami from in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and who he gives a brief description there of the process of devotional service. So I'll just read it, because it's kind of relevant here. Ado shraddha tato sadhusanga tato bhajana kriya tato anartinavritti syat tato nishta ruchistata atashaktistato bhavastata premad yudanchati sadakanam ayam premna pradubhave bhavetkarma. And this is the translation. It says, in the beginning, one must have a preliminary desire for self-realization. This will bring one to the stage of trying to associate with persons who are spiritually elevated. In the next stage, one becomes initiated by an elevated spiritual master, and under his instructions, the neophyte devotee begins the process of devotional service. So a lot of us in this room have already gone through those stages there because we've already been initiated. So then this is what we should be concerned about, you know, now, because now it starts describing from this point on what happens once you take initiation from the bona fide spiritual master. If we're doing everything right, if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, what you're about to hear is what's supposed to happen. Okay, it says here, by execution of devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all attachment. This is what we should be concerned about. Is this happening to me? Attains steadiness and self-realization, acquires a taste for hearing about the absolute personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness, which is matured in bhava, or the preliminary stage of transcendental love of God. Real love for God is called prema. That's the highest perfectional stage of life. I see? So, yeah, that's what we should be concerned about. Are we actually experiencing what's being described here? Because if we're doing things properly, we should be. And also, you know, getting back to this point of preaching Krishna consciousness, that the other day when I was offering my Vyas Puja homage, I was making the point that first, you know, this achar and prachar, but before prachar, before preaching, there has to be achar. So if we're you know, serious about the basic things, you know, and we have this, then that the prachar will automatically be there. You know, it's not like we have to make a, you know, if we're actually serious, strictly following the regulative principles, trying to very carefully channel rounds, we do all the things that, you know, we're supposed to be doing nicely, then the enthusiasm to share Krishna consciousness with other people should automatically well up from within us. And, you know, we'll be able to preach effectively. I think I heard it, I think it was somebody was quoting Indraduna Maharaj, who's saying the best Ghosti Anandi is somebody who's like a really fired up Bhajan Anandi before that. Now, somebody's really enthused about hearing and chanting Krishna, then they're going to be able to preach effectively. Anyway, I'll stop there. I've made a few points there, and I was hoping maybe some of them would be controversial enough to stir up a little bit of questions and answers. So, but about five after now, I actually can't see the about five past. Okay, that's good enough. Anybody have any questions or comments on some of these points?
He, after he left the planet, Anudava, his best friend and one of the best devotees, he told him to stay. And one of the reasons is explained, that's in the 11th canto, is that he wanted to actually preach Krishna consciousness to some of the sages.
What was Krishna's response to that?
What was Krishna?
He's saying that was Uddhava's decision, that he, rather than just go back to Godhead, he wanted to stay and preach?
No, he just wanted, he could have gone with Krishna, but he wanted him to stay.
Yeah.
And a similar thing happened with Lord Ramachandra, one of his best devotees, Hanuman. Hanuman, who can be a better devotee than Hanuman? And somehow or other, he stayed in some part of the universe to actually be reminded about Lord Ramachandra. So, yes, going back to Godhead, for most of us, we are not in that level. We just want to get out of here. But some special souls are there with that mission, and they really relish. There's no difference being in Vrindavan if you're in that mood. But many of us were not sometimes. So that's why, you know, we visit the holy places, we go, we take any advantage of any little thing to achieve that.
Yeah.
But we honor that too. And Prahlad Maharaj, of course, you know, you remember that he didn't want to go anywhere. I mean, he wanted to be in places where he can bring all the conditioned souls back to Godhead.
Well, yeah, and also as we heard the other day when Jai Maharaj was giving class, I think it was me, I asked the question at the end of the class, is it like a material desire to go back to Godhead? And Prabhupada said, no, and he he related that he told the anecdote of when Prabhupada was here in Los Angeles, and Prabhupada confirmed that that's, considering where we're at, that's also a bona fide way to be thinking. But Archita, you want to get your hand up?
I'm not going to let you off the hook so easily. You brought up this point, which is controversial and definitely requires more explanation. Because in this current age, there are a lot of people who think that they can meditate, use yoga to become God. And this statement seems to be supporting that. That God is all-pervading, I'm also all-pervading. If I'm in every atom, then I'm also all-pervading. Which seems to directly contradict what we usually tell people, that one of the differences between you and God is that you're localized. You're here in LA. You're not in Nairobi. You're not in London. You're not in Paris. Krishna's everywhere. People know that. They know they can go anywhere and pray to God, and God will hear. But if your friend wants to talk to you, he has to pick up the phone or, text you or something. You're not all-pervading. But this statement in today's purport seems to contradict that. It says that Krishna's in every atom, and the living entities are there also. So how would you respond to that?
Well, right off the top of my head, what's the use of having $1 million if you don't know you have it? And it's like, okay, it's a statement there from the scripture, but so we accept it because it's stated there in the Shastra, but we have no understanding. I mean, we have no realization of it. There's no, experience. None of us are experiencing in any way how we're present within every atom. And Papa goes on to say in the next sentence that, where is it? Just realize one must accept the inconceivable quality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's in the sentence after was, describing that. So it's just something that nice to know, but practically speaking, it really doesn't change anything. We're just, we're 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size. And as far as our experience goes, any jiva within, the material world, we just understand ourselves as being right here, right now. But at the same time, because we're devotees and we accept what the Shastra says, I accept it, but, it just doesn't seem to change anything. I don't know. That's the best I could do. Sir, you want to?
No, not on that point. I just wanted to say...
Hang on a second. Can we finish? Let's just finish up on that point. Parker. Anybody can help us a little bit with that? Clean it up a little bit? Judah Karma? No, okay. All right, so we're going to move on to another point. Go ahead.
You quoted from the nectar from Rupa Goswami.
Yeah.
Ado shradatata saru sangata bhajana kriya tato narta nivritti syat. And way down at the end of that sloka, first there's faith and association with devotees. Almost at the end is the word tato bhava, that one experiences the bhava. So how are we to understand our divine yogi friends who are this weekend specifically advertising, be in the bhava, and I'm really experiencing the bhava, and this is really bhava. How do we understand that in relation to Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada's statement beginning Adau Sharatata Sadhu Sangha?
Well, I would say that they'd have to be understood as sahajas. It's they're not actually experiencing Baba, not what's being referred to here by Rupa Goswami, and they're cashing in on the naivety and, of the general populace, because, people, they're attracted by that kind of things, and they know people are, their audience is ignorant as to what genuine spiritual, ecstasy is. So they're cashing in on that fact to attract a following and make money. And they might even be, so deluded that they themselves are believing they're experiencing something, maybe, more than just ordinary consciousness. But, according to the to the Vedic scriptures, it's not possible. If somebody's not following the regulative principles, we have to speak of the devotional practices, somebody's not even following the four prohibitive principles, no illicit sex, no meeting, no intoxication, no gambling, there's absolutely no question that they're experiencing bhava, at least on a regular basis. I mean, in the nectar devotion, it does talk about para attachment, shadow attachment, that somebody could experience as a result of being in the presence of a pure devotee or Krishna. But that's, a very rare, exceptional kind of thing. I mean, to be steadily in the on the bhava, you know, experiencing bhava, you have to be an advanced devotee. And from their, you know, lives, we can understand that they're not, what to speak of advanced devotees, they're not even devotees, so it's impossible that they're experiencing bhava. So they're deluded, and unfortunately, they're cheating other people. That would be my understanding.
By chanting, and you feel that you're in bhava, and until the smoke wears off, isn't that some kind of spiritual ecstasy?
No, it's not spiritual ecstasy. There's all sorts of things people can experience. You know, Krishna's made a lot of variety in life, and I'm not saying they're not experiencing something. They're experiencing something, but it's not spiritual bhava, because in order for somebody to be experiencing spiritual bhava, you know, this is like a development. It's a progression here that's being described. So it says here a couple sentences before that, by execution of devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all material attachments. You see? So if that's not there, if it's obvious that that's not there, that the person is not free from all material attachments, and if just the fact that they're smoking marijuana is evidence that they're not free from all material attachments, then it could be understood that what they're experiencing, they might be experiencing something, but it ain't spiritual, you know, bhava. It's something else.
Prabhu, I have a question. But before finishing with bhava, in Mexico, in the Spanish language, the word bhava, and we call them babosos. Babosos mean those persons who are drooling, who actually are imagining something. Mm-hmm. Baba, babosos. They're actually...
No. Crazy.
Okay. So anyway, the question is that if you can explain me, I'm like a second language, I cannot understand this principle of maybe I do understand a little bit. You first sit on the bench, you said that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I can understand that sometimes that principle, out of causeless mercy, you can, out of necessity, like when Prabhupada came, he qualified him to be like, be there and you'll be qualified. But as we also, as he established his International Society for Krishna Consciousness, one of the first lines he said, this Krishna consciousness is to educate systematically and propagate Krishna consciousness to teach other people. So my question is that, wouldn't it be accurate to say also that we need to be trained before to you throw out somebody in the street to preach or to do something?
Correct. I
mean, yeah.
To a certain extent. See, to a certain extent. But not to necessarily to the full extent. Just like when there's a time of war and they call up people to come and be, you know, participate in the military. They don't just like, you know, they don't just stick a gun in their hand and say, okay, go out there. You know, they give them some training, not as much as they'd ideally like to give them, but it's an emergency situation, so they give them. Some training is there. You know, they tell them how to use the equipment, at least, and you know, what to be careful of and everything, and then they send them out. So, you know, in the same way, that's kind of like an example of that principle, sit on the judge's bench. And it's like, usually before somebody could be a judge, they have to have done a lot of different things. You know, they have to have been a law school graduate. They have to have practiced as an attorney for many years. They have to have shown that they were a particularly good attorney, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then they are, you know, considered on the judge's bench. But Prabhupada's making the point that in Krishna consciousness is not like that. You know, we're giving people Brahman initiation. We're giving people sannyas. We're giving people GBC. We're giving people, making people gurus who are qualified but not necessarily fully qualified. But the idea is that if they are sincere, if we're all sincere and we follow the, you know, the authorized direction that's coming from higher authorities, then we will become fully qualified in due course of time. So I mentioned it's a work in progress. Archita has his hands up again. Archita.
It's a very important topic, and we could obviously speak for hours on this, but basic understanding is that sometimes due to disappointment, which is natural, we're disappointed when somebody who's been highly situated falls down. Then we go the opposite direction. We think that, well, they were just cheating all along. And no. Just because somebody falls from a high position doesn't mean they were never qualified.
Yeah, it's another point.
Krishna consciousness is a dynamic thing. You can be going forward or you can be going backward based on your actions, your desires, etc. And it's stated many times in the scripture that even an uttama adhikari can fall down if they commit offense. Even an uttama adhikari can fall down. So fall down, we were all originally pure and we fell down. Fall down doesn't mean that there was no high situation. That's what we need to understand. But due to disappointment, we think that, oh, this person was just a rascal all along and they're cheating me. No. The person could have been very, very highly advanced and can still fall down for various reasons. Either they slacken their practice or they commit some offense or something happens. So fall down doesn't mean a person was not advanced. And even an uttama adhikari can fall down if they commit offense at the lotus feet of Krishna or another devotee or etc. So these things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to temper our disappointment with this understanding that the person was actually advanced. We have so many examples in our society of devotees who were very, very advanced. You can tell by their behavior, the books they wrote, etc., etc. They were actually advanced. They weren't cheating the public at that point, for sure. But something happened. And that something can happen due to our free will. This is what free will means. You're not an automaton. You're not a robot. It's not just, now I'm on the Krishna conscious production line, I can't go backwards. You know, no. You can go backwards based on your activities, your desire, etc., etc. And those who are surrounding us, them, they have to be able to see clearly that, yes, this person was actually highly advanced. And we see that. Sometimes a highly advanced devotee falls down, stays away for quite some time, and when they come back, it's like they never left in terms of their where they pick up and continue. We see that because you don't lose that progress ultimately, Krishna says. Whatever progress you've made, you're going to start at that point, either in this life or another life. So we need to understand, temper our observation with this understanding that a person, yes, they were actually advanced, they made some mistake, they fell down, and when they come back, either this life or another life, they're going to pick up exactly where they left off. And that's why we see so many devotees come through the door, and literally within weeks, they're on a very high platform of execution of devotional service, of their desires, their behavior, because they're obviously picking up from where they left off in the past.
Yeah, thanks. That's a really good point. Actually, the classic example of that is Maharaj Bharat. And we just heard about that this morning when we were reading from the Namamrita. Prabhupada was mentioning about that. One last question, and then we'll finish. Martha.
Thank you for a very nice class. My question is, we are organizing all kinds of Sankirtan festivals, but doesn't look like many people are showing up. What you could suggest, maybe something, how to inspire people, how to inspire devotees to come out, because it's very blissful experience. Like I never experienced with any other service so much bliss. You know, it's amazing. So what would you suggest how to inspire people?
Well, you know, Papa tells this story. There was a mom and her son, and the son had a problem. He was eating a lot of sweets, and so she couldn't get him to stop, and she was worried that it was going to ruin his health. So she took him to a Brahmin, and the Brahmin, she explained the problem to the Brahmin, and then the Brahmin said, okay, call your son in. You know, he was outside, and son came in, and he goes, young man, your mother tells me, you know, you're eating a lot of... No, she said, okay. He said, first, she told the mother, okay, I understand, come back in 2 weeks. So she went away with the son, and 2 weeks later, she came back, and the mom and the son came into the presence of the Brahmin, the sadhu, and he said, okay, young man, your mother tells me you're eating a lot of sweets. He says, yeah. So, well, I think you should stop. It's not going to be good for your health and this and that, you know. And the boy went, oh, okay. And he decided to stop. And the mother was so happy, you know, because she was so worried about that. And so then she was, you know, getting ready to leave. And then she just occurred to her. She said, wait a second. She had to ask one question. She said, can I ask you one question? She said, sure. Okay, thank you so much. I mean, it's wonderful what you've done. It seems like it's worked. But why didn't you just tell him that 2 weeks ago when we came? Why did you have us go away and come back in 2 weeks? And he said, well, first I had to stop eating sweets. He's saying to have the potency. So first I have to start going out on that monthly Sankirtan. I can't answer. I'm not going out myself at this point, but in Sankirtan in general, yeah, it's very blissful. And the monthly festival, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's other temples are doing it and seems to be, you know, really taking off, and they're distributing tons of books and it's getting really good results. So, yeah, it's a wonderful program. I apologize that I'm not able to give a more sincere, advocate it in a more sincere way, because I haven't been going out on it for the most part, so I feel a little hypocritical, you know, saying too much. But yeah, it's a great program, and it's distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, and just like Harinam, you know, we go out on Harinam, so I think it'd be a good idea if we all started participating in that program. All right. So anyway, I'll end there. Thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Kijai, Srila Prabhupada, Kijai.